This paper present one of the most unusual techniques identified in the study of Catalonia modernist architecture, the cladding of walls and ceilings with papier-mâché tiles produced by the firm Hermenegild Miralles. These tiles are similar in appearance to Valencian ceramic tiles, from which they took their designs and surface finishes. The company's catalog included a full range of finishes based on contemporary experiments with glass and enamel ceramics, such as golden hues, relief, and incisions. The product catalog claimed that the papier-mâché tiles were patented, so the technique was closely linked to the firm and marketed it. As far as we know, the tiles were on the market for a rather short time. They were patented in 1892, and the latest example of the tiles used are from 1905. We have found them in works by Antoni Gaudí and Josep Puig I Cadafalch, among others. Because of the importance of the work in which these tiles were used at the architects who designed them, we consider that this was not an on-one-off invention, but rather of that, for a certain period of time, offer rich formal possibilities and simple installation. The new product met a demand for sensory expression and attractive clothing materials. It was inexpensive, lightweight, and easily moldable, so it allowed daring and highly expressive solutions that were affordable for more people. Hermenegild Miralles was a bookbinder with a graphic arts workshop. As seen from today, Miralles' proposal could appear strange or anecdotal, but if one considers it in context, it can be understood why a material like this was completely feasible in these interiors of the turn of the century buildings, not only from the manufacturer standpoint, but also from those of the architects and of the customs themselves. Accordingly, this paper seeks, firstly, to present in context the role of interior clothing in the late 19th century. Secondly, it will describe the formal characteristics and materials of Miralles tiles and the special feature of their installation. And lastly, it will give some example of how this material was perfectly suited to demands set for interiors at that time. I will start with the importance of the interiors at the turn of the century. The Catalan architecture for the turn from the 19th to the 20th century, like a large part of the architecture design in the rest of Europe, devoted special attention to interiors. These were interiors in which new ideas were tested, ideas resulting from experimentation that drew from highly diverse inspiration, giving rise to a new modern language, which is precisely why it was qualified as modernist. As from the year 1900, the novelty of these ideas will grow in intensity. At the same time, however, depending on the use or function of the room involved, the interiors were resolved by the use of conventional or exotic stylistic languages that were not an end in themselves, but rather aimed to help to define the character of the room and were consequently of expressive value. Historical styles were used in some rooms with greater or lesser freedom because was what sought was enhance the room's expressive capacity. At the same time, sensoriness is also a key feature of these interiors. Indeed, it had become exceptionally intense at that time, coming to acquire a truly explosive power. The sensory richness was provided by cladding with dichromatic and luminous interplays. In some interiors color was expressed through finishes of media of highly diverse nature, including different surface treatment and changing luminosity. Taken as a whole, these features led to a great chroma wealth and a variable perception of color, with reflection and shines, and with sparks of light that singularize each space. The chromatic intensity also stemmed from the great variety of material, which provided rich and changing colors and contrast. The chromatic perception was strengthened by the interplay of light. Surfaces clad with velvets, iridescent fabrics or glossy finishes were quite common. It should also be added that an integral part of the richness of the rooms was the highly intense use of tactile resources, such as real or illusory relief that were achieved by means of embossing and texture claddings. Likewise, it should be kept in mind that the wish to enjoy the expressive and sensory capacity of interiors, as has been described above, was not limited to the upper classes alone at that time. The middle classes, liberals, professionals, intellectuals, and artists also wished to participate in it. The quality, values, and satisfaction provided by rooms were very important for the upper and middle classes. The available means mark the difference between them. The means were exceptional and singular in the rich homes, while they were systematized through industrial supply in the middle classes homes. In the final decades of the 19th century, industry improved its processes, furnishes, presses, extruder, etc., which have been undergoing development throughout the course of that period. This new situation led to the appearance of new clothings and to updating of existing ones, bringing to bear their ingenuity and their capacity to experiment and to find novelties and new patterns abroad. Some industrialists made new materials and techniques available to architecture, allowing the achievement of results of extraordinary richness that were, moreover, accessible for more people. The papier-mâché tiles patented by Hermenegild Miralles should be considered within this context. These tiles, as will be seen, could provide clothings of clearly historical inspiration or clothings that reflect new languages, all of them had a great sensory capacity. I will now explain about the characteristics of the papier-mâché tiles of Hermenegild Miralles. The papier-mâché tiles were mainly intended for wall cladding and wainscot in interiors, although, just as will be seen, they were also used to cladding ceilings and the space between beams. Papier-mâché is a low-cost, lightweight and easily molded material, allowing their daring and highly expressive solution that are, moreover, accessible to a broader range of people. To get a better idea of this material, it will be of interest to present the information that has been gathered from the publication and press advertisement issued by the firm Hermenegild Miralles itself. In 1894, it published the catalogue. Just as the catalogue stated, the papier-mâché tiles were a material made of three different types of cardboard closely bonded under hydraulic pressure. Both sides of each piece and its edge were varnished to achieve a glossy appearance and to waterproof it. Tiles of 20 by 20 centimeters were most commonly produced. Wainscots were the most common application, and for this reason, many of the models in the catalogue in the catalog were conceived for this purpose, although it also includes styles of ornamental borders and friezes. The firm also advertised the possibility of producing some pieces especially for the customer. The installation process is described in detail in the catalog and drawing is included to make it easier to understand the process. To install the papier-mâché wainscot, the first thing to do was to attach a horizontal wooden molding at a height of 20 centimeters above the floor, and another molding identical to the first one at the top here, at the top of the plain wainscot. Both moldings should have a small recess to accommodate the vertical slat to which the papier-mâché tiles would be nailed. Two types of slats were used. One, measuring about 2.4 centimeters, was to form the base for the vertical joints of these tiles, while the other type, measuring 1.4 centimeters, was conceived to support the centers of the tiles and prevent them from sagging. Both the tiles and the slats were attached with nails. Each tile was attached with 8 nails. Sorry, in this case, 3 on each side and 2 in the middle. The tiles begin to be installed at one corner here, making a vertical incision on their back so that they could be bent to form the edge is here. According to the firm, any carpenter with a bit of skill could install them. In the sculpting, at the bottom, the 20 centimeters space that were left beneath the molding was painted with glue-sized paint in a deep color so that, just as is stated in the catalog, it could be scrapped without damaging pieces. The advantage adduced by the firm in comparison to the ceramic wainscot with which the papier-mâché tiles competed were the latter ease and speed of installation, the fact that they were unbreakable and lightweight, reducing the cost of carriage and preventing damage under transport while allowing them to be removed and reinstalled, and their low price in relation to their excellent appearance. The fact that these tiles were an economical material was strongly emphasized by both the manufacturer and in the reviews published on some of the exhibitions in which Casamiralles took part. Moreover, according to the catalog, the tiles could be purchased in ordinary shops. The models appearing in the only catalog that is now to use are clearly representative of the ornamental forms produced in Catalonia in the 80s-90s. They are quite complex designs ranging from those inspired by late medieval forms, as was the self-same cover of the catalog, to patterns of oriental inspiration, lending a special importance to designs inspired by the Alhambra of Granada. There is an abundance of geometrical and enchained designs and patterns of Mudéjar inspiration. As mentioned, they are models that clearly draw the inspiration from the ceramic tradition, from which they also took their finishes, such as metallic reflections, ridge patterns, etc. Lastly, I'm going to speak about several interiors clad with papier-mâché tiles. Casamiralles issued a publication presenting the most emblematic works in which its materials have been installed. This publication was produced to boast the product's prestige. We will now look at some of these interiors to determine the ties between the products of Casamiralles and the values inherent to the Catalan architecture of the times. The interiors that have been identified reflect through diverse solutions some of the ways of understanding interiors at the turn of the century as discussed above. Firstly, the interiors of the Al-Farras Palace are rooms of clearly Islamic inspirations which reproduce a space based on the architecture of Al-Andalus. In the same interior solution that is proposed for the stand of the Miralles Company at the Paris Exposition of the year 1900. In these interiors, one finds some of the sculpting of Arabic inspiration in addition to many other elements, such as ornamental borders, friezes, etc. The picture of the Al-Farras Palace that have been preserved allow one to observe the evocative intention of these interiors whereby the clothing expressed an exotic culture that was found to be very attractive at that time. The chosen historical style helped to define the character of the rooms and provided a great chromatic and luminous richness, geometrical interplay, ornamental borders and polychromy, characteristic of Islamic architecture, are to the fore in abundance in the wainscot. The wall clothings and the ceilings, which together with carpet, tapestries and other objects, provide a great sensory richness. In the other interiors appearing in the publication are resolved by means of form of highly diverse inspiration with characterized modernist architecture. They include the halls and guest rooms of the Grand Hotel Cologne designed by Andreu Gaudet and the Hotel Terminus by Josep Puig I Cadafalch. In these interiors, the historical reference have been left aside and the sinuous shapes of the cladding and the furniture are new forms inspired by the most international Art Nouveau style. The sensoriness imparted by the floor coverings, walls, garlands, ceilings, and many other objects are a result of sensory enjoyment in themselves, which they provide by means of a new language inspired by shapes taken from nature. The clarins produced by Miralles Company take up this new language to perfection, even beyond what may be seen in the catalogue. In all these interiors, the walls are resolved on the basis of a skirting, a background wall, and an ornamental border, just as has been observed in a large part of the interiors from those times, in which this three-part arrangement shows that the wall is understood as a cladding and has lost any tectonic reference. Hence, the cladding materials supplied by companies, as in this case the Miralles styles, draw the inspiration from textile forms. Different interiors of Hotel Terminus by Josep Puig I Cadafalch. Lastly, mention should be made of the interiors of Casa Vicens, designed by Antoni Gaudí. Here, a singular use is made of the paper mache tiles, since they are for an isolated project which, according to the days of the work carried out on this house, is prior to the time when Miralles clothing began to be commercialized. The house is dated in the 80s. It may be affirmed that the interiors were fitted before the first Miralles patent, which dates from 1892. This is an interesting fact, since it could mean that together Hermenegild Miralles and Antoni Gaudí tested the new material and experimented with its possibilities before it came to be commercialized. Indeed, Miralles and Gaudí maintained a relationship that went beyond the specific project of the Casa Vicens. At the Casa Vicens, three rooms feature papier-mâché clothing. On the ceilings, and specifically in the space between the beams of the dining room, in this picture, and the floor. Between the beams and the dining room and the first floor bedroom is that. And on the walls of the smoking room, for its part, is a very clear example of the evocative role of exotic and far-off styles and their expressive capacity. Indeed, these rooms are clearly a precedent of the example which, as we have seen, were to be subsequently carried out. On the basis of an unpublished study by Xavier Bizard, we have been able to delve deeper into some of the specific aspects of the arrangement and installation of the papier-mâché tiles in these rooms. In the spaces between the beams, in the bedroom, there are some papier-mâché plaques, in this case, with a design inspired by plant forms. The solution is apparently identical to that found in the dining room, but on studying the arrangement of the latter, some notable differences are observed. The solution of the dining room ceiling seeks to produce a visual illusion through the overlay of two materials. Indeed, under the appearance of a continuous solution of pieces with relief, of cherry leaf and cherries, what was really done was to resolve the space between the beams with ceramic pieces, which is the same solution one finds in some other rooms, and then leaf, spruce and cherries of compressed cardboard were placed on top of them. In the smoking room, Miralles tiles are to be found of the upper part of the wall, above the ceramic wainscot. Here, there are the papier-mâché tiles. The bottom part rests on a horizontal wooden slab that follows the wainscot. The tiles are nailed to a set of vertical slats. In this case, however, the pieces show a peculiar arrangement since they are installed diagonally, meaning that the joint does not coincide with the slats. The wall of the smoking room evokes another of Gaudí works, which was to be carried out years later, the Café Torino, or more specifically, its interior room. The ceiling of this room, which was clad with papier-mâché tiles, showed close affinities with the wall at the Casa Vicens. Both were resolved with a single piece in relief, which is repeated to provide a continuity that confuses the perception of boundaries, and in the specific case of this room at the Café Torino, it carries on to the walls themselves. This is a formal proposal that Gaudí will also apply to the hydraulic floor tiles that were to be used in the Casa Batlló, and that indeed are being installed at the Casa Milà, the same ones that years later, in 1808, will be produced for the general public by the firm Escofet. These hydraulic tiles are another example of an industrial material which, like the Miralles tiles, offer suitable formal qualities to meet the expectation of the turn of the century architecture, and that was, moreover, accessible for a much wider public. Thank you very much.